Hey, you got the morning show with Aaron. And in the studio, I've got Crystal from the Karawi Project. Cuddle up to the microphone there, Crystal. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, we've already just mentioned the sobering issue off the air. Like, there's a lot of joking around going on in the studio before, but then I brought up the fact that I have heard that there's been a stoat incursion with the oi chicks.
There has been, yes. Yeah.
And, well, I was going to say not a good one. It's never a good one. But tell us what's been going on.
Yeah. So just for those, I guess, for those people that don't know, so these little oi chicks sit in burrows. They're seabirds that come into our coastline, and we spend a lot of time protecting them. So we do lots of predator control and have 24-hour monitoring cameras on these burrows. Mm. So we kind of get a really good insight into what's going on in many of the places where these birds are breeding. And the chicks hatch in August, kind of August, September, and then they sit in these burrows until December. So they pretty much usually fledge around Christmas.
Okay.
And, and so we've just been really lucky this year, like just with the number of burrows we've been able to pull through right to the end of the season. But then just in the last 2 weeks, we've had a bit of an incursion, so around indicators.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of burrows there, and we had, I think, 5 chicks in burrows there, but they're all gone now. So that's pretty sad.
Oh, just from that area.
Yeah, just from that area. So, yeah, so we're kind of sitting in the high teens, kind of like around 17, 18 chicks that we had going through, but we'll probably only have about 14 left now.
That's... seems all right, though.
It's a higher number than we've ever had.
Right, but we've just got to get through to sort of Christmas.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Because they're really not safe until they leave that fly out to sea, are they?
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah, they're definitely feisty. Like, last week we spent a few mornings banding some of the chicks that we can access. Like, sometimes the burrows are so deep and so hard to get to.
And were they vomiting fish up on you?
I wondered, yeah. And they can be quite peck, you know, they peck at you and they can... yeah, definitely put a hole in through the skin.
Did you personally get vomited on by the chick?
Yes.
And yeah. You told me in the past that really smells bad because not rotting, but processing fish.
Yeah, yeah. It's like stomach. It's squid and krill and, you know, lots of the good stuff, and then it's all over. It was mostly over my hands and gloves and that, actually, so it wasn't too bad.
Just try and wash it off afterwards, out damn spot.
Yeah, well, we kind of clean it all up because we don't want to leave too much of a trace of that kind of good smelly stuff around the burrow either.
You kind of want to sanitize the area.
Yeah, we wrap it all up and take it away. But it's kind of their last defense is that, you know, here, I'll vomit up a whole bunch of food for you and maybe that'll detract you. But really overall, like, they're pretty docile and, you know, they just don't have any defense mechanism against predators.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we did find a couple of dead birds, chicks that are nearly to adult plumage and just got a little bit of fluff still left. So they're kind of, we call them our teenagers. And, you could definitely tell, like, one of the burrows, like, you could tell where the stoat had got it in the neck. They bite them in the neck and hadn't been able to drag it out of the burrow, so still found it in the burrow. Yeah, so it always feels really sad, especially for some of our volunteers and team members that have been going there, you know, numerous times in a week sometimes to do that work. And so there's a huge amount of time invested in getting these chicks to out and fledging. So it always feels really sad, but it's just a reality of what we're dealing with. And the fact that we can still get chicks out is like a really positive thing as well. So it just confirms to us that we have to keep intensifying and improving our networks and getting people on board to help with trapping. And
were they stoats?
Yeah, we think so. Actually, I need to check with Nick. Sometimes we capture, you know, whatever's going in on the camera footage. Sometimes we miss it. It probably was a stoat. Yeah, but we have had ferrets as well in the past, obviously. So, and they're even harder to catch.
Obviously things are way better because you can remember a time easily. We can all remember a time when the Oi chicks, none of them survived.
Yeah.
That was the norm up until about 5 years ago or something like that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's the fact that they're still 14 is pretty significant.
Yeah, definitely. And the cool thing is seeing where they pop up, because they're so connected and attached to their natal breeding ground. So these birds come back to where they were born themselves. And so, like, we've had just recently one really cool story is that someone's got one under their house, literally, like, in their kind of shelter, garage kind of area. And the bird, we had a chick there a couple of years ago, and then they moved some stuff around, and last year they didn't see the birds come back. And then this year the parents have come back to exactly the same spot. Even though it's kind of had, you know, some gear moved around, like it's kind of burrowed back underneath that where the new stuff's been put, like some planks and wood and stuff like that.
So it's dug its way in.
It's dug back underneath and got a chick there. So we kind of get some really fun, good news stories as well. And those landowners often, you know, take extra care to look after those chicks and
I presume and they haven't got control. A cat or a dog or anything.
No, and they make sure, like, if I know some landowners that have, you know, burrows on their land, and they'll keep their cat inside every night and just do everything they can. And we actually know that, you know, they have some really particular breeds of cats, and they're not interfering with the burrows, which is really, really awesome.
How does that work?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't be able to say this if I hadn't seen it on the camera footage and from what they've seen, but they've been able to keep the cats inside at night and just feed them really well.
Yeah.
And the cats are just out in daytime, and we've actually seen them near burrows, but they never go in.
Right.
And they always leave the chick alone, and the chick survives. So
just keep them fat and well-fed.
Yeah.
High-class food, though, probably.
Yeah, and they also, like, they're kind of more those Siamese-type cats, you know, maybe a little bit less feral than some cats.
Yeah,
so a little bit more kind of specific breeds. I'm not saying that this is the case for every cat.
But,
you know, there's landowners that have, you know, kind of doing lots themselves, and then on top of that, like, their cats have been able to kind of be, you know, safe around the burrows anyway.
That's quite interesting. Now you just want to train the cats to defend the burrows.
Yeah.
That's the next move. You could maybe train a dog to do that.
Definitely. Yeah.
Because they'll be more than happy to chase the stoats and ferrets away.
Yeah.
They do that with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah.
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 Cool. All right. And we always talk about the oi, but there's other species around there. I know I think there was a little blue penguin nest somewhere.
So, yeah.
Is that still surviving?
Yeah. So that's fledged.
Meaning, so it's gone.
Yeah, so that
survived.
Yeah, so there was a parent, and then there was a chick in the burrow, but it was already quite advanced, and so that's gone.
And that was just at the end of down the end of the beach somewhere.
Yeah, kind of around Half Moon Bay area there.
Yeah.
Oh yes, and there was one at the beach too. Yeah, we had a couple of sites. Yeah, this year of little blues.
Is this were they already sometimes managing to produce chicks? Or is this also a result of all the trapping?
They would be benefiting from everything that's, all the trapping and everything that's going on. We wouldn't be able to say for certain, but the chances of them fledging successfully before would have been really low.
Yeah.
And we did find quite a few dead predated burrows in the early days. So, yeah. So occasionally, you know, a bird will get, you know, chick away.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And I guess there's a lot more awareness in the community now about keeping your dog on its lead on the beach and things like that at this time of year or through spring. Are there places that it's okay to take your dog off the lead? I was just thinking I took the dog for a walk the other day and let it off the lead further in.
Yeah,
in the
harbour. I mean, it's always, you really just don't want to encourage your dog to chase birds in general.
Yeah.
Because once a dog gets a whiff of it, they don't want to give it up.
Mm.
So the main thing is just having full control of your dog. So you either have to keep it on a lead, or you have to know that your recall's really good.
Yeah.
So when, you know, so that the dog, like, because it's not just oi chicks, like you say, it's not just little blues, but it's also heron and spoonbills and all sorts of.
Where do they nest? If your dog's running on the sand in the harbour, are there, Is there anything there that they might get that we don't want them to?
Yeah, well, they could do. I mean, it's probably more a little bit more on the other side of the harbour and around the Pancake Rocks and that.
Okay.
Like, you
rather
know,
than the residential area over here.
Yeah. But there'll be still forest birds and all sorts of, you know, like just other just common, more common birds breeding.
Yeah.
And seagulls and oyster catchers.
There are plenty of seagulls.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, but
but I know people want to care for everything, but we did start off talking about like highly endangered species.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And even like, you know, one of the gull species is endangered too.
Okay.
I'm trying to think now if it's the red or the black billed. I've gone
not one
blank.
That we would see very much, clearly.
Yeah, but it is around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cuz yeah, like so I mean birds in general are quite threatened. So even though you might see lots of them somewhere in some places, it's not, you know, we're really not, I don't think we're in a stage in life in the world where you can just take any of that kind of wildlife for granted anymore.
Yeah, well, this is true. Yeah, as a rule, just be careful.
Yeah.
What about on the mountain, like just the vegetation? Like, is that changing because of the trapping?
We've got some really good undergrowth, kind of, you know, lots of stuff coming through, and that definitely makes it hard when you're cutting tracks and also trying to do trapping.
Yeah.
Heaps of supplejack and, you know, that kind of stuff around.
Is supplejack, is that a native plant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just got an English name.
Yeah. But it probably has the other name, but I can't think of it.
Yeah, that's right. I just don't know much about plants.
Yeah.
So I have to admit.
It's not my strongest skill set either. But, yeah, lots of understory. And that's mainly like when, you know, just not having goats and kind of browsing species.
Yeah.
That
but
makes
you're not
a big
trying
difference.
To get, you're not trying to get rid of goats, are you?
Well, there are no goats officially on Karioi.
Yeah.
Pigs can be a big threat. Yeah, they'll dig up a lot. A few pigs can be okay. Too many becomes a bit of a disaster as well.
Do the rats and the smaller things, mice, they eat the seeds and like that, that side of the, and the flowers and the fruit?
Yeah.
Although, do they eat? I mean, oh God, now I'm getting into ridiculous detail. Like, do they eat this, chew up the seed or do they poop it out and then the seed still, you know, the life of the forest keeps regenerating?
Yeah, well, like some seeds do benefit from kind of incubation or like being digested you know, like so there can be a case or like getting kind of like, I think it's a corphis seed that you have to scratch and have, you know, sit in a bit of wet and be scratched and
before it'll germinate
you know. So there could be some seeds that can benefit from being eaten and pooped out. But, yeah, in general, like our ecosystems are not set up for introduced predators, and you can see that in the behaviour of the species that we have here.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the less we have of them, the better.
Some members of my family just went for a walk around Lake Waikaremoana over on the east coast. And the dawn chorus apparently was a serious highlight over there. I don't know if we have much of a dawn chorus here.
Yeah, well, it's coming. It's definitely improved. Like,
yeah.
I can really tell the difference now. Yeah. It depends a little bit where you are and time of day, obviously. But, yeah, like what we're seeing now and what we're seeing in people's backyards is, you know, partly the predator control, also providing the plants. You know, like flaxes and, you know, the fruits and the flowers and all that, you know, available for foraging.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just it's so much better now than it was. It's quite incredible.
Okay, that's interesting that you can just notice that just right off the bat.
Yeah.
It's really clear. Yeah.
We do regular bird counts as well and, you know, look at what species we see and we keep a species list.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a significant number of threatened species around the area here. They might not be around in large numbers, but we should be seeing them come back as the work increases and over time.
I know with the oi, like it's going to be a long time before you see results, because how long is it before they start to breed? Like how many years old are they?
So some of those early chicks that we banded will be coming back in the next couple of years.
Okay, so you're looking forward to seeing the banded ones
turning
up.
And whether they do come back, because you always get some that will disperse. But a small percentage. But the majority should come back. But that means that they would have had to survive out at sea for 5 years first.
Yeah.
So obviously there's massive obstacles they would have had to overcome.
That could be, or that could be good news or bad news.
So it's going to be super interesting to see who comes back and what, you know, numbers they come back.
And there are other communities up the coast doing similar projects with oi. Like, might you see some of theirs come here?
It is possible. We haven't picked up a lot of birds that have got bands on them, so it's, you know, it's not a large number. We do get a lot fly over, but not land. So at certain times of the year, they, you know, there's a lot of birds in the air coming to shore and prospecting.
Yeah.
But they might not land or stay here.
Might not like the look of it.
Yeah. So probably the next closest is just across from the Manukau Harbour and kind of up there, and then Bethel's Beach and Murawai and that.
There's a community group up there.
Yeah. So there's like tiny small colonies of grey-faced petrel in some of those areas. Yeah. Wow.
A lot. Yeah,
but there's not a huge amount on the west coast in general.
They're on other coasts?
Yeah, I'm more on the east coast.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, we do keep talking about them, but it is about all the other birds, and you're seeing an increase in all the other birds.
Yeah.
Just got to keep doing the work.
Yeah, we just got to keep, you know, trucking along.
Yep.
So it never stops.
You got plenty of volunteers?
Yeah, we've just had a few more sign up. We did our kind of first talk, you know, in the community for quite a while.
I was
going to
ask about that. You did the science night.
I didn't go to that one
because I thought I might have heard all this.
Yeah, you probably had, but you know, it was nice. It was about 24 people or something. But it's nice to talk in your own community. It's a different story. People can relate and they're connected to this place. We had a few people sign up to volunteer and
awesome.
Yeah, so it's really cool seeing more people come on board and just the enthusiasm people have to come and support. It's really encouraging.
And you were getting some t-shirts for them, you said earlier off the air. T-shirts?
Oh no, the t-shirt, the Christmas ones.
Yeah.
No, that was a Christmas edition we did for the team.
Right. Oh, the staff.
Yeah.
Because you've got quite, we've got about 11 staff or something, have you?
Yeah. Well, we're actually down to 8.
Okay. You've got 8 staff.
Yeah. It depends a little bit on the number of education people, but we actually have had a few people leave, which has been sad. We've got Dayton's leaving.
He's
been with us for 4 years. Graduated from our Manukau program in Raglan Area School, and then came and worked for us, and he's been a ranger for us for the last 4 years, and he's departing and leaving Raglan.
Wow.
So he's fledging himself.
Yeah.
And then Nick, who's been our seabird seabird ranger.
We've interviewed her.
Yeah, you've talked to her. So she's going to go back to full-time study next year. Mm-hmm. And, so we're going to lose her, so we're all but broken-hearted, you know. But
now that COVID's over, people are kind of getting on with their lives again, and I guess that's just going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like, you know, most of our team members do stay around for a long time. You know, Bexy was with us for 10 years and Nick's been around for 6. So.
And Bexy's just moved sideways to a sort of associated project anyway, which is, what's it called again? The corridor.
Yeah, the Porongia to Mangatau Tree Ecological Corridor.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I mean, it's normal, but it's always sad, you know, like when someone, you know, people leave. But then it creates opportunities for other people to join. So, so we are a little bit smaller, but on the other hand, you know, compared to what we were a few years ago, because we don't have as big a track cutting team.
Were you cutting new tracks back then?
We had a big fund from lotteries, and we were cutting a lot of tracks to set up the bait station network.
So these are not tracks that other people were going to walk through?
No, they're not walking tracks. They're bait station tracks. They all have private access and that.
Not easy to go through anyway, probably.
If you want to go on them, you should come and volunteer on our next bait station day.
Yeah, that's the way to do
it. It's cool because you do get to access some of the mountain, you know, that other people don't get a chance to. But a little bit smaller because we have a little bit less funding as well. It's the reality of it. Sometimes we slow down a bit because we just don't have the funding to expand in the way that we do when we get a big grant.
Yeah.
So next year will be a bit of a challenge again. We're kind of dragging ourselves through a little bit and chasing the funding, but it's a little bit slow and it's definitely a little bit tougher since, you know, COVID.
Yeah, I think stuff got diverted to COVID, but that should be not happening anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. But it's all prioritization and what people value at the time. And sometimes longer-term projects are harder to keep getting funding for.
Oh, I know. The committees who make these decisions get excited by new things,
yeah,
potentially, and sometimes the committees change and the priorities change. They often, like, they I think, because I'm always applying for funding as well, and I think sometimes, like, people on the committees, like the lotteries one, will, they'll feel like they're doing something if they come up with some new priorities.
Yeah.
But, it means all the community groups that are applying for funding, and there's lots through lotteries, they'll have to find a way to explain how what they're doing fits in with that as well. Otherwise, they lose their funding and their life is precarious. So
Yeah, it's challenging because conservation is not a quick fix, and it's not always new stuff.
Well,
we're going
like
to new areas, but yeah.
It feels like it's going to be a permanent thing. Like, we'll never be able to take our eye off the ball out here.
Yeah. And if we set this vision of, you know, predator-free 2050, you know, like, hopefully, you know, funders and the government will continue to support it. Because a massive part of DOC is now supporting communities to do the work. But then if DOC can't support those communities to do the work, nothing gets done, you know? So, it is a bit of a challenge, and I'm still kind of getting my head around, like, how to kind of work through that. And part of that has been that we get more support from our own community, from businesses and private funders, and just individuals willing to donate, and that makes a huge difference.
So you've got a program or a how does that work?
Yeah, well, like, mostly, like, you know, we've done things like the Give a Little campaign, but we also just have people just donate on a monthly basis, you know, a small amount that they're willing to just put towards the project. We have had, like, different things, like sponsor a trap or sponsor a hectare or sponsor a oibaro.
Yeah.
So we've had things like that. We're just kind of reviewing kind of how we want to present it. But at the end of the day, every dollar counts and makes a difference. So, yeah.
But when you go to your website, there's a whole bunch of local businesses, like, their logos on there.
So the big one that's been quite popular for businesses, and just as part of their ethos, they do this 1% for the planet.
Yeah.
And it's something that was initiated by Patagonia, and there's a online international 1% for the planet kind of infrastructure. But, like, some businesses in the community just kind of have said, oh, we'll just put 1% aside and we're going to donate it to a cause that we're passionate about.
And they can use that as part of their promotion for their, if they're selling products, they can put a little logo on and things like that. Like, I guess
Raglan Chocolate's done that.
Raglan Chocolate
and Morning Glory Coffee and even some real estate people in the community, you know.
People are wondering why we're talking. Jono was in here earlier, property brokers. We're giving him a hard time. But he loves it.
Yeah.
Hey, before we go, I should say there's a holiday program starting up tomorrow, I think it is.
Yeah, yep.
Because today's theoretically the last day it's at Raglan Area
School. Yeah, last day of school.
Although they had their prize given yesterday for the young, so I don't know. They might be leaving.
They've got
at
a
lunchtime.
Half day today, I think.
Right.
But so we've got a holiday program, like, starting tomorrow and then after the kind of Christmas break as well.
It's actually quite a serious summer holiday program you've got going on, like, a lot of stuff happening, not just a couple of days.
It's a couple of days this week. Yeah, it's really good because it's another way that you can support the project as well, because, like, that what we found is with our education staff is that sometimes we wouldn't have work for them during the holidays and funded work, you know, for our after-school program and in-school programs. So the holiday program kind of buffers that, you know, drop in work and funding that we have during those periods. So that kind of provides an income stream to keep, you know, staff employed.
So that's
really cool.
And so that's tomorrow and the next day, and then sometime in January things are happening as well.
Next week as well, I think.
Oh, next week as well.
Yeah, I might need to check. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I've just looked at this week. That's all I know about, and that there's stuff later.
Yeah, so. But it's not too late to sign up. But it is good to sign up sooner rather than later, so we can kind of plan, obviously, staff time and that. And if we see days aren't booking up, we'll drop the day.
Yeah.
So it is good to get onto it if you know what days you need support.
Yeah, so search Karioi Project online or go to our website, our What's On God. I know there's a link in there. RaganRadio.com.
Yeah.
And just remind people the other things you can do, because you've got the backyard projects and all that kind of stuff. Tell us about that briefly.
Yeah, so I literally, apart from doing it for biodiversity, it's really great to have a trap in your own backyard and around your house. I literally trapped a family of 6 rats out of my roof the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well done.
And so, they do come in. The weather's a bit funny, they'll chew out, walls and wires and all sorts of things. So apart from the fact that it's really good for biodiversity, it's really good not to have rats in your house. So we can provide a trap. Just contact us and we'll set you up for a pretty minimal cost. Yeah, and so this is Backyard Hub. There's an education program, opportunities to volunteer.
What about the paid service? Have you mentioned the paid service?
Yeah, so we do have a paid service where we do some households and also bigger properties where we do all the predator control for you.
Yep.
And that's obviously at a cost. But again, it provides local employment and some of our young
Dayton
guys.
Dayton was one of those guys. Dayton, as you talked about, is leaving before. He was one of those guys who was employed.
Yeah. We've got a few of them. It's just awesome because they get an opportunity to work in their own community and get conservation skills and then kind of go on to the next thing.
Yeah. Hey, folks, we've been talking to Crystal from the Karioi Project, and I think that's... We can leave it there, can't we?
Yeah, I've got to go for a meeting at the school.
We were supposed to finish at 5:02.
That's all right.
Oops. Thank you for your patience.
That's all right. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah, see you, Crystal.
Bye.
Hey, folks, just to update you, Argentina did win that semi-final against Croatia, 3-0, easy victory for them. Another semi-final tomorrow night, but it's time for me to go tomorrow morning. I'll see you tomorrow.